It's March 31st, 2019, and I call the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education to order. It is now 4:30 p.m. Dr. Mitchell, will you please do roll call?
Sure. Lynn Ebenkamp.
Here.
Carrie Chen.
Here.
Angelina Pride.
Present.
David Malkin.
Present.
And Donna Friedman.
Here.
All board members are present.
Are there any changes or items to be pulled from the agenda? Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda of the board study session for Thursday, March 28, 2019?
I make a motion.
Second.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. All in attendance will be led in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag by Board Vice President David Malkin. Thank you. Dr. Mitchell, are there any public comments this afternoon? One. Please note the public is welcome to provide comment to the board. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes unless extended or limited by vote of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes unless extended by the board is allocated for each subject discussed. The Brown Act open meeting regulations under which the board must operate do not allow board members to comment on non-agenda items or information you may bring up that are not in the agenda. Additionally, no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a comment. Roy Humphreys.
Okay, thank you for all the good things. It's going to be kind of rushed because we've got a lot of topics to cover here today, an expansion on what we did last time as far as the audit situation, and something that the Giano Media School in Roland Heights has noted that funds were being spent and without the proper signature chain, which is possibly for fraudulent transactions occur and go. Another situation we come here to that wasn't highlighted too well, And that is that a person in the ASB situation were having these credit cards, et cetera, and guess what? They had the items sent to their house. Is that a red flag or what? Another situation that we said, and where's Shay Lohman here today on the, shall we say, violence or unsafe school conditions. And in the news, it said this week, we have the students molesting kids in the class. I mean, my God, people, and you people on your website, it's atrocious, your reporting process on that. And last night, we had a unique situation over at Roland High School, and so I do not, what is this toilet deprivation syndrome that exists in this district? We had female persons saying, hey, man, in this whole, what did we spend, $52 million over there? And this woman said, hey, man, I had to go a country mile. And this is a woman to use the toilet, okay? That it just speaks woefully badly about this district. And you know, that was planned years ago. So it's kind of like a syndrome. Okay, what do we got? Minute. Oh, I got all kinds of time. Next thing we're going to do, Kamala Harris, your representative there, wants to increase teacher salaries $315 billion over 10 years. So, you know, we can do the math on that. What's that, $31 billion? And show me the money. And are you going to? Who's going to go for that one? But that's the kind of representation that we have in Washington. And underway to lower the barrier for parcel tax. You want to see something interesting? Read what Howard Jarvis and these other people are saying about that. And such a regressive thing that a millionaire is going to be paying with his $1 million probably the same as a guy with $50,000, which is my little shack over there. Other things that we need to look to is this pension thing. You don't have to believe me. That's not me. And I'll be dead and gone when this thing hits its climax. But that pension thing, and I've told you again and again, has to be addressed. You have to be out front on this, not, we'll deal with that when things come crashing down, so forth. Okay, folks, thank you for your time, and maybe we'll get some more toilets for $52 million. Thank you.
Dr. Mitchell, would you please get specific data from Mr. Humphreys, whatever he's accusing us of, so we can look into it?
Next, we will have a facilities report. I will turn it over to Dr. Mitchell at this time.
Thank you very much. So this afternoon, our presentation is around facilities. And so Alex Flores is going to lead us. It's in three different parts. And so he's going to start with the introduction. We'll go into the three different parts of our presentation. We have planned lots of content in a relatively short period of time. So take it away, Alex.
Thank you very much. President Freeman, Vice President Malcolm, board members, Dr. Mitchell, cabinet and audience, thank you for allowing me to make this second presentation this year on district facilities. Excuse me, let me turn on my own presentation. I always think if I wasn't supervising technology, there would never be a problem. In this presentation, we'll review the 2012 bond projects and the allocated budgets, opportunities to refinance two series of the 2006 bond, status report on the Oswalt New Campus Project, Roland High School's addition project. Each of these topics will be co-presented, and we'll have the opportunity to ask questions before moving on to the next topic. Before I begin with the first topic, I would like to recognize district staff that are here today, Aubrey Craig, Rosanna McLeod, Chris Ferraro, and Marcos Rodriguez, and the shy person that's not coming in, who's sitting outside, Josefina Sandoval, who's working on the next agenda. I would like to share with you what I shared last night at the CBOC meeting after the independent auditor shared the excellent audit with no findings. It's only possible by the dedicated work of this staff on a daily basis for these great audits to take place to ensure our taxpayers that we're doing everything correctly. So I would like to publicly thank them because they're not thanked enough for what they do on an everyday basis. Thank you. Voters approved the 2012 measure bond for $158 million. These next two slides illustrate the scope of work to be performed with these bond funds. The bond projects listed specify new construction at three schools, Roland High School, Nogales, and Oswalt. Besides new construction, other types of projects like installing energy efficient upgrades, replace or upgrade locker rooms, repair or construction of multi-purpose rooms, library or media centers, upgrade fire alarms, renovation or replacing aging facilities as necessary, as described in the bond. Other originally planned 2012 projects by name were Roland Elementary Classrooms, Ibarra Two-Story Building, Roland High School Small Theater Modification, Roland High School Locker Rooms, Air Conditionings for the Gyms, Gianna Quad, and Legacy and Beautification Projects. The 2012 bond is broken up to three funding series, A, B, and C, for $50 million, 50.7.6, which both have already been sold, and the remaining Series C for $40 million. This slide illustrates the projects and revised budgets as presented at the April 2018 study session. I would like to highlight one project. There seems to be some confusion by the public regarding the Oswalt New School project. We did not receive new additional funds for this project. I wish we did. The original budget was $30 million, and after staff discussed student and staff site needs, with the architects and construction estimators, $20 million was added to the original budget. How was this done? $20 million was reallocated from the 2012 projects. One thing we did, we eliminated the budget for the program management, about $3.5 million. Previously, before Dr. Mitchell arrived, there was a program manager that was, as the high point, was getting $80,000 a month to oversee the program. You are looking at the program managers for the district, Dr. Mitchell and myself, with the fine work and support of the staff that is sitting behind you. That saved the district $3.5 million. The Nogales Addition Project was fully funded with 2006 bond funds, not using the $10.8 million from 2012. We removed and reduced projects that no longer house RUSD students. The Roland Elementary Beautification and Building Project was combined to save over $1 million. And one of the big things also was legacy projects. Legacy projects have been funded by deferred maintenance funds. Legacy projects were like paving projects throughout the district. The board approved over $500,000 worth of projects last year using deferred maintenance. So instead of using bond projects for what we believe are routine maintenance, we saved those for buildings to use in 2012. And also, the Giana Quad project was completed under budget by $150,000. We also anticipate the Roland High School project to be completed over $1 million under budget also. Are there any questions on the 2012 bond projects that I can answer at this time?
So what you're saying is that $50 million didn't magically appear for Oswald. It was gathered from money that wasn't spent for other projects, and rather than losing that money, we were able to transfer it over to Oswald. Is that correct?
Yes, we were never in jeopardy of losing the money. We just reallocated some funds. The same amount, $157,600,000, is still the budget we're working with. And no, it did not magically appear. It did not fall from the skies. But if it does, let me know. I'll get some baskets, and we'll go get it for the district for our kids.
We've been accused of that.
But you originally had $30 million.
Yes. Absolutely. But there was an original budget of $30 million for that project. But we need to build the site to meet the needs of our students, the instructional needs and the staff needs, and it was going to be $50 million for it.
And the reallocation of funds other than the position that you're conducting, was there any projects that weren't funded at the other school sites, or did the money come from savings from
savings, using different funding sources to pay for some projects? Using all the 2012 bonds instead of the 2006 bonds to pay for the Nogales project so that it's not co-funded, and using all 2012 funds for the current projects. There's one school that no longer houses Roland students, so that was brought back down also. You have to understand, when we do the bond, we went to the bond several years ago, it was based upon the reality at that time. These amounts could change again, because we need to build what is needed for our students at that time and looking forward also.
The page 6, the other originally planned 2012 projects, why do you list these projects separate from the others? What's the reason?
Because these were not listed. What I showed you first were actually bond language that was on the ballot.
Uh-huh.
And these are being referred to from that bond ballot of different projects that were listed as items to build. So they don't appear anywhere. So I wanted to make sure I highlighted them to be shown.
Okay. So these projects are originally planned when we were advertising for...
Yeah, previous.
Well, it was on this. It's not something not on the.
No, this was previously before Dr. Mitchell and I arrived. Projects that were that were planned to be built or done.
Thank you for finding the person that was getting $80,000 and taking care. That's what he was getting? Oh, it was
the company was
the company was getting that just to oversee things.
To oversee the bond project, yes.
So thank you so much for reallocating the money to the right places where it's best for the district. Thank you.
No problem. Yes, that's the Nogales and Rowan project. Yes, it is. Yes. And again, that's something that the board approved not too long ago, and we're definitely going to get a cost savings there too, a significant cost savings, because more of the scope of the work is going to be completed, which was going to be under that amount that's up there.
Right, because I think that was the bid that regards
with Climatech.
Yeah, that they're going to assume for that price.
Yes.
When I said thank you, it was for your whole team, not just you, but I appreciate everything that you do. That was a great job as a team effort.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I just want to say one other thing, too. That is the Bond Oversight Committee has done a fantastic job on working with you and your office, and your office being very transparent with the Bond Oversight Committee.
Yeah, and I think it's to really share, it's not just our staff, but it's also the board and the CBOC who do it together. So absolutely, thank you for saying that, because they've done a fantastic job and they take it seriously. And from our visit to the Kelbaugh meeting last Monday, it was an eye-opener for the two that said, wow, we're really doing some really good stuff here. And it was nice for them to go and see that, because sometimes you just live in today's reality here. But when you go out, you go, whoa, this is good.
Yeah, and some of the board members at the Kelbaugh were talking to our members, and they were having such troubles getting information that they couldn't get at their sites, that they couldn't believe what we had. But what impressed everybody more than anything was that Mr. Flores was there, and he was the only assistant superintendent that was at that conference, and they couldn't believe that.
Well, it's part of the responsibility, and if I didn't go, I know Dr. Mitchell would go. So seeing no further questions, I'm going to ask Mark Farrell to join me at the table, please. Yeah, let me do my two slides first. Thank you. A BOB program is not just composed of the projects that will be completed, but also the analysis of funding series and reviewing previously funded series for the opportunity to reduce taxpayers' costs. On a quarterly basis, Mark and I meet to review our bond program. Early in our discussions, I share with Mark the board's, Dr. Mitchell, and staff's interest to not use CAB bonds for the remaining series that needed to be sold, and the interest to refinance any CAB bonds, along with the opportunity to refinance any series that would result in the saving for our taxpayers. Mark will share the information related to these two areas. Thank you, Mark, for joining us today.
So the slide in front of you lists all of the different series of outstanding bonds that the district has from its 2000, 2006, and 2012 bond measures. The two highlighted, the 2006 Series B and the 2006 Series C, those two bonds, you can see on the far right, this, the column that says next call date. Basically what that means in English and not bond language is August 1, 2019 is the first date that those bonds could be refinanced. Basically very similar to refinancing a home mortgage. These bonds have been outstanding for a while. They have higher interest rates than current market rates, so we can refinance those bonds at a lower rate, and those savings go back to the taxpayers. You can then see the other various series of bonds. Some are what are called non-callable, meaning those particular bonds cannot be refinanced. And then you can see the last four can be refinanced in 2023 and 2025. So there'll be some future opportunities to refinance bonds again and save taxpayers additional money. The timing of taking advantage of where interest rates are is great for the district. You can kind of see this chart shows municipal bond interest rates, kind of an index going back to March of 1999. And you know, overall, the general trend in rates has been down over the past 20 years. We saw rates spike up a little bit towards the end of 2018. But rates have fallen again pretty dramatically and really have fallen even more probably since I put this slide together. The Federal Reserve meeting last week where basically the Fed said they plan to be on hold, raising short-term rates any further has really caused rates to fall pretty significantly over the past few days and weeks. So this slide shows a summary of the savings from doing these two refinancings based on interest rates about 2 weeks ago, March 12th. Quite a few numbers on the page, but I'll kind of walk through the highlights. So overall, between the two series of bonds that we refinanced or refunded, basically the two words mean the same thing, be about $15.5 million of old bonds will be refinanced. Those bonds have an average interest rate a little bit over 5%, but in today's market, the interest rate would be about 3.2%. So quite a bit of savings there. Looking over the total costs of the financing, estimated to be a little bit over $250,000, and that covers everything from legal fees, our fee as the financial advisor, the underwriting fee, the investment bank that actually sells the bonds, the rating fees for the credit rating agencies that rate the district. Those savings come out of the proceeds of the bond sale. So the savings numbers that you see here are net of those costs. So the community would see savings of just over $2.5 million. And that would be reflected in lower tax rates on their tax bills over the next about 15, 16 years. If you present value those dollars, say, well, what would those dollars be worth today? It's about $1.9 million, and on a percentage basis, 13%. The industry standard is to start thinking about doing a refinancing when the savings are above 3%. We think as a firm that's a little bit low. We'd say maybe wait until it's about 5%. When you're in double digits, it's kind of no question to kind of take advantage of where the market is, refinance the bonds, and save the community some money. And then this just breaks out the savings by year. The bulk of the bonds that are being refinanced in the 2006 Series C, those payments are in 2031 to 2034, so you can see most of the savings accrue then. And then on the far right, you can see kind of what the estimated change in tax rate or the reduction in tax rate per 100,000 per year over the remaining life of the bond. So it starts out, you know, on the smaller side. If we get past 2021, where it's kind of up to $1.50, but then, you know, 38, 43 cents. But by the time we get to the last 3 years, over $2 in savings, so a $2 reduction in the tax rate in the longer years. And In terms of the potential timing, if the board basically gave direction that, yes, we'd like the staff and us to pursue this, we could be back as early as on April 15th. We would have legal counsel distribute the first draft of documents. So basically between now and then, they'd get started working on the legal documents. And with the goal of bringing the resolution to the board for approval in May, the district would then get the rating around May 13, which would allow us to post a preliminary official statement on May 14th. This is basically the offering document that goes to investors that tells an investor everything they would want to know about Roland Unified before they made the decision to buy the bonds. And we would then, about a week later, be able to sell the bonds, and that's when you lock in the interest rates. So mid to late May, we could lock in the interest rates, lock in the savings to the district, and then a couple weeks later, the financing officially closes, kind of like closing on a home sale, and that's when all the documentation is finalized. And really kind of what we're doing with this timeline is trying to move quickly to take advantage of where interest rates are. There's nothing that says rates are going to go up from here, but there's also no guarantee that they don't go up from here. So part of it is let's move quickly and lock in these savings. And then on Measure R, whenever we talk about general obligation bonds, we look a lot at the district's assessed value, so the property tax base that's paying back the bonds. And the Measure R plan assumed assessed value would grow at 3% annually. And the district has enjoyed actually very strong assessed value growth over the past 5 years, 4.6%. So basically about 50% higher growth than we built into the plan. And so this has some very positive effects for the district. If we look at the bond issuances for Measure R, the Series A and the Series B bonds are the bonds that were already issued back in 2013 and 2015. And you can see in Series B, we did need to issue a certain amount of capital appreciation bonds. Those bonds can be refinanced in the future, so the district will have the ability to refinance those and lower those interest rates and potentially convert those into the current interest bonds. And back in 2015, we initially thought that Series C would also need to have a fair amount of capital appreciation bonds. But based on some of the strategic work that the district has done, kind of the timing of the different projects, and we've been able to delay the issuance of Series C. Initially, we were thinking that those bonds would have to be issued in 2018. And we probably will more likely need to issue, the district would need to issue those bonds in 2020, so probably starting that process about now. So the kind of combination of the district being able to kind of adjust the timing of its projects to issue the bonds 2 years later, the strong assessed value growth, and where interest rates are today, we're projecting you will not have to use any capital appreciation bonds in Series C. So that's a very good outcome. Overall, based on where interest rates are now, we'd be looking at a repayment ratio of 2-to-1 for the entire Measure R program. So basically a dollar of interest for every dollar borrowed. And that was projected to be about 2.2% back in, or excuse me, 2.2-to-1 back in 2015. So a nice reduction in the costs. And then lastly, this shows what the estimated tax rates would be going forward, assuming the last series of Measure R is issued. And kind of the plan, again, is to keep the $38.80 tax rate that was promised in Measure R kind of in these early years through 2027. And then where the tax rates drop because the old bonds were paid off, using the full amount of the $60 per $100,000 that you give Prop 39, which allows you to pay the bonds off much faster and reduce the interest cost to the community, so lowers the total cost of the program to the community. And that's the end of the presentation, but happy to answer any questions that the board has.
One
On page, took off my glasses too early, sorry. On page 9, can you just in a simple way explain to me how the assessed valuation is determined?
Sure. So the basically the county assessor's office will determine the value of every property within the district. With Proposition 13, if a particular property doesn't change hands, you know, isn't sold in a particular year, or no major renovation is done, the maximum amount that property value can change is 2%. So you'll have, you know, let's say homes that were, you know, bought 10, 20 years ago with very low assessed values relative to the market value if they were sold. Whenever a property sells or if there's a major improvement done, the assessor will revalue that property. So if it's a sale, it would be revalued at that sale price.
So it's no different than with our homes.
Correct.
Other than the possibility that interest rates skyrocket between now and May, is there any negative on refinancing the bonds?
No, because right now what you have are investors getting paid a higher interest rate than they really otherwise could or should because of where interest rates are today. So really the risk is that interest rates go up and maybe it's not $2.5 million in savings, maybe it's $2.2 million. We could also get lucky and rates could get lower and we're coming back with 2.6 or 2.7 million in savings.
And I wasn't too clear on the CAB bonds.
Yes.
We can refinance those or?
For the, some of them, yes. The ones that were part of Measure R, the 2012 Series B bonds, yes. Those were specifically structured and written in a way that they could be refinanced in 2025, starting in 2025.
So if we refinance those, say if it's a 24-year bond, and we finance it halfway through, do we do it at the value of the 12-year mark? Or
correct. Correct. Okay. So what it's accreted to or what it's, you know, the value is compounded to at that 12-year mark.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure that number out, how big of a number that's going to be.
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you, but you know, when we kind of get closer to that point, we can show what you know what the savings will be, kind of what the value of those bonds is at that time, and then what the savings would be to refinance those.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Carrie.
Yeah. On page 7, just on May 9th, the board will have approved a resolution. What's the resolution? What's the scope of resolution about? Would that include the interest rate? Because we don't know what interest rate will be yet, right, at that time.
Correct.
So should the resolution give a range of interest rate, not higher than?
The resolution will authorize staff to move forward with refinancing the two series of bonds. It will set parameters, so it can set a not to exceed interest rate and a few other parameters related to the financing, and then really direct the administration to take whatever actions are necessary to complete the refinancing. And if there were specific metrics that the board wanted to, you know, see in the refunding, you know, savings of a certain dollar amount or percentage, that's something that can be included in the resolution.
Okay. So is that 250,000? Is that negotiable?
Some of it is, some of it isn't. Some of it's contract rates. Some of it, you know, for example, the rating agencies have a set fee schedule based on the dollar amount of the financing. So some of it is still subject to kind of being bid out, and some of it is set by contract or just kind of the rates that certain firms or certain institutions have that are part of the process.
Since this isn't something we talk about all the time, just every few years, refresh our memories about some of the terms.
Yes.
Now on page 4, the interest rate along the left column, That's the market interest rate. Is that correct?
Yes. So this is a This is a an index basically that is kind of used in the industry to kind of benchmark against. It's basically theoretically where a AAA rated bond would trade. So AAA being the highest possible credit rating that you can have. And so this is the 10-year bond. So where an interest rate would be for a 10-year bond is kind of a metric just to show where the overall the market is moving.
For a AAA rating.
For a AAA bond. And so your bond, every other municipal issuer's bond would trade somewhere off of or you know above of that interest rate. And that's, again, this is particularly looking at the 10-year bond as just a benchmark.
I'm looking at my copy online, so it's a little different than your pages. I think it's page five. No, yeah, the refinancing summary. Anything that refers to refunded on that page means we've already worked on to try to get the interest rate.
So
low, is that correct?
The difference there, refunded would be the old bonds. So this would be the old 2006 Series B and Series C, and refunding would be the new bonds issued in 2019 to refinance those bonds. So basically what you do in practice is issue a new series of refunding bonds, and those proceeds pay off the old refunded bonds.
There's a term on one of the pages that refers to arbitrage. Can you tell me how you use that in doing
sure,
your
sure, we probably could eliminate that. Basically, okay. What arbitrage would be or negative arbitrage would be, if we had to sell the bonds far in advance of that August 1, 2019 date, you could have a period where you're basically paying interest on two sets of bonds, and that just is kind of a metric to track that inefficiency for having two series of bonds outstanding for that short period of time.
Thank you.
I have a question about the cost of refinancing.
Yes.
And this is not a small money. Cost is quite quite a big money for refinancing such amount of size of the amount. What is the, can you tell me what is the cost? I can could have itemized what would be the cost, fees, recommend fees?
Sure, I can't off the top of my head itemize it, but I can give you all of the categories. So you will have legal fees. So you have a bond counsel firm and a disclosure counsel. So those are the firms that put together the bond documents and put together the official statement, the preliminary official statement that goes to the investors. You have the financial advisor, which is us. And we've got I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we have a contract with the district with a fee schedule. You've got rating agencies. So the rating agencies are kind of like a consumer credit rating agency, like an Experian or an Equifax, that basically they analyze the district and assign a rating, and the investment community uses that to determine what interest rate they're comfortable paying for on the bonds. There will be a trustee, which is a commercial bank, that basically then assists with getting the money from the county. So the county will levy the taxes, and the bank would then get the money from the county and facilitate getting that to the investors that ultimately own the bonds. Those are the lion's share. Oh, and then the last is the underwriter. So that is the investment bank that actually, you know, buys the bonds from the district and sells the bonds to the investor. Those are the biggest dollar amounts, and then there'll be a few thousand dollars here and there for things like, you know, data that needs to go into the official statement, those types of things.
It looks very complicated to me. and can you after the meeting, can you provide us detailed information?
Yes.
As detailed as possible, who is going to get paid how much,
yes,
estimate, and list all of them. So I'm very interested to see,
yes,
who is going to pay and who is negotiating the, because that's negotiable, right?
lots of money is non-negotiable.
Right. Yeah.
So who are you?
Sure.
Some negotiate with them or how?
A lot of the fees are already negotiated in contract with the district. So for example, our fee, I believe you probably have a contract with bond counsel. We can double check that. The rating agency fees are set. It is set based on the dollar amount of the financing, so we can show you what those fees are, but those are not negotiable. Probably the biggest fee that's negotiable is the underwriting fee.
Right.
So that is something that I believe.
Then please still make a note on the end, says this negotiable is not negotiable. Mm-hmm. And then I want to learn more about those.
Okay. Yeah.
And how do you get paid? How does Scott get paid?
A fixed dollar amount, and it's paid for out of the proceeds of the bonds.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Will you explain more or clarify that the savings include the fees?
Yes. So again, the line on page 5, the net debt service savings, $2,540,000, that is the savings to taxpayers after the $258,375 estimated are paid. So any of the savings figures that are presented to the board will always be net of any costs associated with the financing.
I wanted to say it was very confusing at the beginning when I read it, because how could the taxpayers get credit and then the school district, aren't we losing out? But now I realize, explaining that because of the refinancing, the the property taxes will get less, and that the school district will still get the same amount of money that we were planning on getting.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, and so there's no general fund cost to the district to doing the financing.
Okay.
Just
thank
a little bit
of
staff
much.
Time.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much for a great report.
Thank you.
Again, I'd like to thank Mark for joining us today. And he's more than welcome to stay, but you could also leave. There you go. At this time, I'd like to call Jorge Prieto from Zambia and Prieto Architects to join me at the table. I also would like to recognize, as Jorge sits down, the principal from Oswald, who is here on his day off to join us today, Jason Garcia. Thank you for joining us. The scope of the work for the Oswald project is redesigning and building a TK-8 school, and this replaced all the portables on the campus. The project development includes all stakeholders, initially involving all stakeholders, but with routine meetings. But the last few meetings are really heavily engaged with district staff as we finalize plans for submittal for DSA. This timeline shares and illustrates activities that have taken place, and this also was shared at the April study session. This slide illustrates work that has been completed and anticipated work to be completed in this project. We are still on target to submit project to DSA in April. We have modified some work that will take place on this project. With the support of the board and Dr. Mitchell, we were able to hire the CM early in the process. After reviewing the scope of work and the compressed timelines, Ledesma Meyer recommended the underground trenching and electrical and low voltage work to take place this summer. If the work was not completed now, construction costs would have increased and the project would have been delayed by approximately 6 months. Jorge will go into detail the last input meeting from stakeholders and provide information on the current and next steps of this project. This will be followed by several slides of the proposed design for this project. Some slides of the exteriors will be familiar with slight modifications, but we did ask for the interior renderings to be illustrated for your review. For most of you, Dr. Mitchell, myself, and Cabinet, this will be the first project that will be constructed with our input for design. It has been our goal to design this project, keeping in mind the valuable input we have received from the board. Our intent is to design what you see tonight. So no surprises. What you see tonight, we intend to build. If any modifications are requested by DSA, we will forward these changes and communicate them with you and all stakeholders at Oswald. Jorge.
Good evening again. I'd like to start by talking about the updates that we presented this month. One was for staff and the other one was for the community. The staff presentation included most of the slides, if not all the slides that you're going to see tonight. In addition to that, we also answer a lot of their questions regarding the design and the submittal and approval process with DSA. During the community meeting, there were also questions regarding construction, dust, and the scheduling of the construction during school hours. Those were answered by Mr. Flores. And then we broke out into smaller groups and asked or answered questions regarding specific items on the plans and the slide presentations. We have been having bi-weekly meetings with the construction manager and with staff. Marcos Rodriguez has been influential in. Yeah, I'm still on the previous slide. In making these meetings happen and getting all the stakeholders to each one of these meetings so that we can move forward with the plans. What I have here with me is a half-size set of the progress of the plans that will be submitted to DSA. This will be eventually printed on full-size sheets, but it's grown quite a bit since we started the project. Sorry about that. Again, we are in the construction documents phase. We're working currently on the campus set of drawings, as well as the interim housing, which will be required to house students as the construction progresses throughout the site. Those will be two separate sets of plans that will be submitted to DSA for review and approval at different stages. The approvals we've obtained to date are the CGS approvals, California Geological Service or Survey, for the geotechnical report that was prepared for the site. We registered the project on March 11th, and we'll be doing our formal submittal on April 22nd. So we're a few weeks away from formal submittal. Once the plans are reviewed, comments addressed from DSA, and approval from DSA is obtained, we'll be moving into the bidding phase. Once the low bidder is selected by the district and approved by the board, then the construction will begin following that. The next several slides, and I'll try and go through them as quickly as I can, are basically exterior views that you've seen in the past, as Mr. Flores indicated, as well as interior views of most of the spaces. Some of them are typical, so we are showing one room, maybe two. I'll start with the site plan. Basically, this shows you what the campus will look like from the street all the way through the property. Upper right-hand corner is the existing building that will remain on site. And slightly left of that, facing the streets, also two more buildings that will remain on site. The rest of the buildings are new buildings on campus. From front to back, you have your parking lot. Then you have your kindergarten building on the right-hand corner, label number 3. You have the administration building in the middle that has a library attached to it. That's your building number 1. To the left of that is the multipurpose building number 2. Going back towards the back of the site is your classroom building, what we call the East Classroom Building, building number 4, and building number 5 is the upper left-hand corner building, which is also a classroom building. Now this is a view of the parking lot and some of the buildings, an aerial view. Now we're looking at the campus, kindergarten on the right-hand corner, lower right-hand corner. Can everybody hear me okay?
Would it be helpful for the board if there was a some sort of illustration? Let me see if we can get, a pointer on that.
So the pointer is...
Actually, you can use it to point. And use that to
Oh, got it. Thank you. So this is the kindergarten building right here, the administration and library, the multipurpose, and the east classroom building. And here you see a little bit of the west classroom building. Multitask, ambidextrous. Bird's eye view, looking from the rear of the site towards the parking lot. This is the existing building, the existing classroom building. Your west, your east, multipurpose, administration, and kindergarten buildings. And then this is looking at it from a different angle. This here is the lunch shelter. And then the rest of this is the hard surfaces for playground and the play field in this corner down here.
Where was the administration building?
Right in here.
I'm looking for the dot.
I'm sorry.
Oh, over there. Okay.
It's in the middle of the three buildings.
Okay.
The blue roof right in here. And again, it's right behind the NPR. This area here houses the kitchen serving area. And then this is your east classroom building and your west classroom building. And then these are the other two buildings that are existing that will remain on site. This is a slight bird's eye view coming in from the parking lot looking into the campus. And again, looking at the administration building, the entrance between the administration and the kindergarten, and then the other entrance between the administration and the NPR. View again from the parking lot into the administration building. And another view. This is the courtyard between the NPR and the administration and library back in here. This is a view of the NPR as you're walking into campus from the parking lot. Another view of the courtyard. And now a view of the library portion of the administration building from the rear of the site. This is a view of the lunch shelter. And a view of the kindergarten playground area. If you notice, we turned the playground area inwards into the campus for security. And it's separated with a fence as well and gates.
Did that help TK also?
Yes. Yes. There are five classrooms for TK and kindergarten. This is a view walking between the kindergarten playground on the left and the east classroom building on the right, as you're walking towards the lunch shelter and the rest of the playground and play fields. The next few slides are going to show the interior of the administration building from the lobby to the work area and one of the workrooms. And we have the current board members in the back.
I want the board to know that I did not ask for my picture to be up there, and it will be removed.
What a good-looking group.
Just bringing it down to the human level.
Very detailed.
This is another view of the lobby area as the parents approach to the reception. This view is from the work side of the lobby work area. And the computers are not included in the project.
There you go.
Again, all the furnishing is, other than built-in furnishing, it's by district. This is a view of the workroom, the teacher's workroom.
Now those cabinets are included, by the way.
Pardon?
The cabinets are
included. Yes, built-in cabinets are included. There will be about 5 slides for the library building and space. This is looking towards the librarian from the corner seating area. This is looking into the library from the librarian's point of view. And then this is looking again to that seating area in the corner, facing the rest of the campus, the rear of the campus. Oops. The next few slides are for the NPR. This is looking into the stage area. And then this one is looking towards the campus, kindergarten. Or I'm sorry, the administration. A couple of slides of a typical restroom. The next few slides are of the kitchen serving area. We worked with the district's nutrition director and with a kitchen consultant to lay out the kitchen so that it meets the needs of the district and the school. The next few slides are of a typical kindergarten classroom.
Is there a slide showing the inside eating area?
There is no indoor eating area. It's the outside lunch shelter. We were told that there was no need to have seating in the NPR. So if there is a requirement for that, then the district can put in tables, and but not fixed, movable tables and chairs.
What is the maximum capacity of NPR? How many seats?
I don't have that number on me right now at the top of my head. But it's a few hundred. I think it's 200-300, maybe more. I'd have to look and see. I don't have that information. I can find that, though. But they're not fixed seats. They're movable seats.
And to get an idea, the current NPR, it's about 1.5% to 1.75% bigger of the current NPR they have now. So it's larger.
This is bigger. This one is bigger by 1.5%.
By 1.5%, a little more than 1.5%. Of the current NPR.
Is there a guideline size of the NPR versus the total number of students in campus?
Ratio.
1/4 or ratio?
Not that I'm aware of. It's a designed.
No, there project. Isn't. Again, looking at different views of the typical kindergarten classroom.
Have restrooms?
They do. There's two separate restrooms, but they're to be used by either sex at different times. So they're single occupancy restrooms, but two separate ones that are between two classrooms.
So they both use it?
Correct. So.
Is there a staff room in between the kindergarten classrooms?
One more time.
A staff room, like for the teachers to have?
Yes.
Okay,
so
workroom. Okay, thank you.
I got to remember which is which. This is the workroom to be shared. I don't believe I have a... Yeah, and this is one of the restroom doors. There is another one that's on the other side of the hallway. Again, that single occupancy restrooms for either sex. This is a view of one of the typical hallways for each one of the two classroom buildings. And again, the hallway with a view of the drinking fountain and one of the restrooms, or entrance to the restroom.
Where are the sprinklers?
Pardon?
I don't see the fire sprinklers.
There will be fire sprinklers. It would take me a little while to put them on this set of drawings. I have faucets in the on the sinks and soap dispensers. Would that help? And some lights?
Okay. There we go.
He's going to take your picture off the wall, Gary. Watch out.
There'll be sprinklers in between some of these.
Could I ask a question about restrooms, since that was such a sore subject on some of the work that's already been done at Oswald? How do they figure the needs of how many restrooms per student? Is there like a ratio?
There is. The California Plumbing Code has a requirement for the number of occupants, and it's based on 50% for each sex. So there is a calculation that we have to do based on the number of occupants, and then the number of fixtures are accounted for that way.
And is it based on occupants in a specific building or the whole?
The whole site.
Whole,
so you don't necessarily have to have it all in one building. You can spread it out.
Okay.
So
thank you.
And just so you know, there's much more than the minimum required by the plumbing code. So you'll need to hire more.
Could you actually go in detail of how many restrooms per floor and staff restrooms? Also, they might be in interest of the board.
Sure, it'll take me a minute.
Oh no! It's okay. I'm sorry. It's okay.
I just have to open up the plans.
No, it's okay.
Okay. So each of the classroom buildings have restrooms on both floors, multi-user restrooms. They also have staff restrooms on each floor. The West Classroom Building has an additional set of restrooms that will serve the existing building that does not have any restrooms. So it's located near the corner, at the corner of the building, closest to that existing building. So that would help facilitate the use of the restrooms.
And since we asked you about the minutia of the sprinklers, is there any way, looking at the building from an aerial view, that we can see where the restrooms are located in the building? Is there any kind of a key to that?
Not on this slide presentation, but we do have a site plan that shows that we can forward if it needed.
One thing we talked about, never mind. I haven't been to any of the community meetings, so that's okay.
They're in the middle.
Yeah, well, again, to sort of help with the question, they're located centrally on the buildings, the two classroom buildings. Staff restrooms are also, there's one additional restroom on the first floor directly from the exterior of the building, accessible from the exterior of the building. In the administration building, there's a couple of restrooms for staff. And then also at the end of the building, the back of the building, the northwest corner of the building, there's another set of restrooms for multi-use for men and women, for staff.
A set of restrooms for students and for staff were strategically placed next to the building that doesn't have restrooms, so it'd be close proximities where they could use restrooms for that building.
Okay, thanks.
Is the restroom near kindergarten area smaller size?
The restrooms for the kindergarten, the fixtures? Yes, they're size for the age group. Yes.
Would you prefer questions at the end and just questions about the pictures now, which
it's
is
your meeting,
easier for
I'll,
you?
I'm happy to do either one.
Okay.
I got a whole bunch.
Should I finish?
It's up to you. Well, let's finish.
We're almost there.
And then, okay?
That's okay.
All right, and just ask questions about the pictures.
So again, another view of the restroom. This is a typical classroom. And the last slide should be of one of the views of the band room and chorus, which already has some of the acoustical features that are required for that room. And that's the end of the slide presentation.
David.
Yes, I have one. Bear with me.
Should I?
the very beginning slide you had, let me see, I dog-eared these. Page 22.
This one?
That's good. Well, the next one, too, other one. Can you show us how the family would be dropping the children off at the school and what the route would be?
So there's a couple of ways to do this. Here we go. This is the entrance driveway here. There's two ways to go. You either circle around here, and you can do your drop-off this way, or you bypass if you have children that are the upper grades, and you're going to drop them off closer to the entrance for the upper grades here. So you can go straight through and then do your turn. Additionally, you can continue through and drop off here as well. This has actually been revised since this slide, where we now have a walkway along this edge as well, and then kind of links with this walkway here. So there'll be area here for bus drop off and then for additional parent drop off as well.
So the bus would use the same?
No, the bus would enter through here.
Oh, okay, different entrance.
And if your children are the upper grades, that could be another entrance for the parents as well.
Now, has the community bought off on that transportation pattern?
We've shown this over several months already. So my understanding is that yes.
Okay, because that's always a bottleneck at all of our schools, and a constant problem is getting drop-off done in a efficient manner.
And early on, we looked at a different location for additional parking areas, and that was turned down. This is pretty much you're landlocked. You're on a small site. You can only do so much and still be able to support a program.
Of the six or seven recommendations that the engineer consultant that we hired, this was the one that was agreed upon to be the most functional. Also, one of the things that was shared, and I think I shared at the last study session, is we will also need to do a staggered start and release. That will also alleviate some of the traffic concerns that you have. And that was shared with the staff also, again, just at the last March meeting. And we'll be getting their input also as how much that stagger should be, since they had done that in the past also.
Slide 51.
I don't know what number, 51. Can you tell me what it looks like?
It's the inside auditorium.
Okay. My numbers are different because I don't have the full. Okay.
Is that the multi-purpose room?
51?
Yeah, that'd be okay, that one, yeah. That's a stage now, right?
That is correct.
Will we have curtains that
no,
will be drawn?
No, it is not designed as an auditorium. This is a multi-purpose, so it's very limited.
There'll be no curtains?
No curtains.
Okay, now, I can't tell, but is that an ADA ramp on the far end?
No, there's actually a chairlift on this side of the stair. Here we go, right there.
Okay, so there's a chairlift, okay.
That is correct.
And the railing, is that stainless steel, powder coated, or what?
For the MPR, stainless steel. Everywhere else outside is galvanized.
Okay, now is there any possibility of getting that powder coated, or what was the paint that they used at Nogales? I forget the name of it.
Two-part treatment.
There's always possibilities.
So the answer is yes.
Okay. That was just an issue with Roland High School. Right there. Underneath, right where the telephone is, there's a sink there?
That is correct.
Is that for staff?
That is correct. It's for staff, and it's also accessible. It's an ADA-accessible sink, but the kids can also use.
Well, I'm just looking at the children that's portrayed there. I don't think they'd be able to reach and turn that water on.
I'm pretty sure that the height of the cabinet is going to work for the students.
Isn't okay. that actually the staff room rather than?
No, this is in the classroom.
That's the classroom. And this looks like those counters are fairly high for kids if that's how tall they are going to be. I mean, their forehead comes to the counter edge.
They're away from the counter too, so the angle might be a little.
The cabinets will be to the side according to the grade level that's there.
Okay.
And the sink and water is a new thing that was not there before because that was a request of the staff. So we wanted to meet the needs of the staff.
Okay. 63. The corner guards. The more we can get, the better. those corners become victims.
Every corner that needs it will get one.
That'd be great because it really saves a lot of maintenance. And 68. Are we going with a monitor rather than smart boards there or projectors or what?
Yes, that's our intent.
Is it going to be a monitor then?
It's an interactive board.
Smart.
It's
okay, it is. Okay. And that's included then?
That's part of the furniture and equipment that will be part. It's part of the overall budget.
Okay.
Did you say that's a screen or a monitor and smart boards? Or?
No, it has software that it acts similar to a smart board, so it's interactive.
Okay. And one last one on...
architectural plan. That's furniture and equipment that we will purchase later. So when we're all done, depending on what technology is at that particular time, we will purchase what is necessary for that. And it is included in the budget, so it may not be exact to that.
Okay.
So we have smart boards, we have projectors, we have interactive televisions, and who knows what we'll have in 2020, 2021, 2022.
And the furniture in the classrooms is shown for conceptual, so there will be whatever the district and the staff decide to select.
Okay, and recently we've been going through all of our school sites, doing security issues, cameras, lighting, things like this. Will that wiring be put in at the time that the school's built for our cameras, our security cameras? Or would we have to do that afterwards?
So the raceways and wiring will be, but the camera system is not part of our scope of work.
I'm just wondering if we can get that wiring infrastructure done.
It will. Just like Dr. Mitchell shared with the technology we're designing now, all the pathways, everything inside the walls, underneath the ground that needs to support it is being constructed so that we can go ahead after the construction is place the technology, place the cameras. So all pathways are being designed at this time.
So the conduit will be?
All the conduits there, and then we just place the cameras after. Okay. Or the
then a question parts. That came up last night was on landscaping. If you know if it's water conservation landscaping,
we're using drought tolerant landscaping where possible. Okay. You know, obviously, not every plant is going to be able to be, but most of the planting that will be installed will be.
Okay, thank you,
Lynn.
I was very pleased to see that you're using a traffic engineer because I think Oswald is one of the worst schools traffic-wise in the morning because those parents don't use buses. They all take their kids, and so it's a nightmare for the neighborhood. And we understand you can't solve every problem, but I think having a traffic engineer help with the logistics.
We also met with the city as well, and we had several discussions, several meetings. There was questions and requests to add lights, and they were denied. Requests to reduce speeds, and they were denied. And so we tried everything we could to make it as safe as possible outside of the school grounds as well.
Okay. And my other question, is there an overhead view that would show where the fields are for the older kids to be having their recreation? And so I see that big field. That's a grass field, right?
That's the grass field. And this area here is for the upper grades.
Okay.
And then this in here and into here is for the lower grades, and then the kindergarten is in here.
So the lower grades area that you pointed to, that would be like playground equipment for the
yes
for
these the are tether balls, one basketball court, playground equipment, swing sets, four squares, ball wall over here, And then on this side, the same thing. We have a couple of basketball courts, some tether balls, a couple of ball walls, playground equipment, and four squares.
Okay, thank you.
Lena?
Just one question because David asked all my other ones. On slide number 63, one of the complaints about the current building is the noise when people walk down the hallways. What are we doing to make sure that that is not an issue when students are walking down this hallway?
The building is very different from the existing building. The finishes are different. A lot of the finishes are different, and we do have an acoustical engineer on board that has been looking at the plans and providing their input as to what measures we need to take for the spaces.
I think the block walls and those metal tin
the open roofs, the open roofs, yeah.
Off.
So it's a very, very different system. Okay. This is a jetboard ceiling as opposed to an open ceiling.
Thank you.
Carrie?
Yeah. Do you put future expansion or future upgrade, like utilities or technologies, into the consideration? But I mean, this LEED building lasts a long, long time. You're going to be about 50 years, and in the future, so is it do you consider those factors? Yeah.
Well, there's really no expansion as far as building is concerned. Technology, it's all done with raceways, so anything that changes can be done through conduit work. So there's really no additional, because there's no expansion of the campus. There's no room. Mm. So typically you consider those things when you're expanding for future growth. But as far as technology, everything is run through conduit, so can be easily replaced.
I mean, sometimes the foundation... You build a one-story building, but you build a stronger foundation. You can in the future.
These buildings are designed as they are. If it's a one-story building, it's designed with a one-story foundation. If it's a two-story, then it'll accommodate a two-story foundation.
There is communication.
Because there's more than just a foundation to do a two-story building. It involves opening up walls, putting in columns that are not in place. It's more intrusive than just to simply throw it on top of an existing building.
Lynn?
There is communication with our staff, with our IT staff's part of the meetings also, to discuss what our technologies and what are our technologies down the road also, so we're building not for just today, but for down the road as well.
And how many two-story buildings are there in all?
We have two and a half. And when I say half, is the NPR, half of the space has a two-story portion that houses the music, the band and chorus classrooms and restrooms. And that building also has an elevator. So all two-story buildings have elevators and exit stairways.
And restrooms.
And plenty of restrooms.
Okay.
I have a question on slide 14, which is the front of the facility.
14?
Oops. On coincide.
I think you just passed it.
This one.
All right,
right there.
Look at the screen.
We're trying to get marquees on our school sites. Is there a place there for a marquee anyplace?
We are considering the similar to what's there now, which is out in the front by the landscape area. There is an existing marquee. So that is our, at this time, this is where we're considering putting the marquee.
So it wouldn't be mounted on the building itself?
Not on this building at this time.
It'd be closer to the street level, to the street, where it currently exists.
Okay, so there will be one, though. Okay. And the other thing is, I think it's at Nogales, the classroom walls are made of a material that you can stick pin things.
That is correct. So all the classrooms do have tack board as well.
On all four walls? Or?
Yes. Or in some cases, partially, because of cabinet work.
Right.
Yes, and they go up to the ceiling as well. That was a request from staff.
And we're also looking at incorporating some cork board like by our offices so they can actually put notes or things by offices instead of using any tape.
Okay, thank you.
Just a comment. This has been an interesting project for me as a board member to observe because we were really pretty much attacked with all the change orders at one of our projects. And I can see with the project that's going on right now at the high school in Oswald, we've really worked hard, staff has worked hard to try to iron out any kinks, try to come up with any problems that might come up. We're never perfect, but that time has been well spent, and we've really involved the community and staff, and I commend everybody on the work they've done.
Yeah, and now that the construction manager is on board, there's also an additional set of eyes looking at plans and providing their input as well, which is very beneficial.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Oh, I wanted to say you answered all my questions. I wanted to ask about bathrooms, the NPR room, if it was bigger. Is the kindergarten playground bigger than it was?
It's very close to the existing, maybe a little bit bigger, but it's also at an angle, so it's not as what you have now.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be more beautiful.
It's got some landscaping. It's got some hardscape and
okay, the pictures were beautiful. The campus is going to look wonderful. Thank you so much for a great report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge. And it was a great segue, Ms. Ebenkamp, as we go to the next section here. At this time, I'd like to ask a familiar face to join me, Russ Hall from Ledesma Meyer. As I shared earlier, we have already started the work with our construction manager for this project. Russ will share their team's involvement and also highlight the interim housing and staging for this project in the next 10 minutes.
Any questions? Okay, well, thank you for having me tonight. We'll make it as brief as possible. I think we're going to start off here. Beg your pardon? Okay. He always bullies me around. We'll start the presentation with our involvement in the Oswalt project and working with ZP Architects and the district. I think you know myself and, of course, Larry, our director of operations behind me here for Ledesma Meyer. That's who's been appointed to this project specifically. We also will have an assistant site superintendent to be determined, and Julie Williams, who's been in this district working for a long time, worked with Rosanna Marcos. I think everybody's probably heard her name before. And then Barbara Santamont is also going to be used as an assistant project coordinator for us. In the plan review status, by looking at the plans to date, we've determined the best case scenario for the phasing of the construction with the help of the district and ZP Architects. We've been reviewing the underground utilities for the phasing application. By that I mean that typically, a project is designed as a whole, but once it's designed as a whole, it needs to be split up and see how it's going to be put together in which phases. So we've been looking at what is the most applicable way of doing that. We've come to a resolution on that, which I have a slide here that I'll share with you in a bit. We determined the location of the low voltage hub. That's similar to something we did over at the current project at the high school. When you're building a new campus on an existing campus, you need to be able to provide low voltage feeds. And to do so, we've had good experience with putting in a temporary hub, is what we call it. Over at the existing high school, we use your P27 building for that. On this particular project, we've come to the determination that we're going to use some sort of a C container of sorts and lift it up off the ground and use that as a hub for this project. We're coordinating interior low-voltage layouts to incorporate district standards. We've sat in meetings biweekly with your IT department. Kurt's been there. Phil's been there. Of course, ZP and ZP's consultants have been there as well. We're reviewing and finalizing the kitchen plans. Actually, the kitchen plans, as mentioned earlier, are done. We've met with Maria Davila in detail, and we've gone through all of her requests, actually, and provided what we think is an applicable kitchen at this point. We've been reviewing the best-case scenario for lay-down yards and trailers. This, in my mind, hasn't been completely figured out yet, but it's good that we're getting an early look at it. It is a very tight site, so we still have a little work to do in that regard. We've also been sharing with ZB Architects, myself, Marcos, Alex, Larry, we've all been involved in sharing with them what we would call lesson learned and district standards on our previous project. So that's why it's been very beneficial to have us on the project early. We've had an opportunity to know and to say to Jorge, in this particular situation, we know for a fact that this is what the district prefers, and we've also kind of verified that with your IT departments, and well, not just IT departments, but with Marcos, who represents all the departments. But so those are the benefits that we've been providing as far as doing the plan review status. And talking to Jorge tonight, apparently the plan's progress right now are somewhere between 80% and 85% before they go to DSA on April 22nd. Once they go to DSA, they've been submitted, that's when we'll really, Ledesma Meyer, really open up a set of plans and do a full comprehensive plan review. If we do it beforehand, it's kind of like trying to hit a moving target, basically. So we try to wait until it does go to DSA. So we're looking at what is submitted. I included this slide just to give the folks here an idea of some of the things we're looking at. These lines just basically represent different utility undergrounds. You know, the yellow is the gas, the red's the power, and so forth and so on. But I just wanted you to see kind of the things that we're looking at. These are the type of plans we're looking at. We've been using crepe overlays in these biweekly meetings that we've been having with the electrical consultant, with the district, with the architect, and talking about what is the best way to, again, dissect this project so that it goes together smoothly. We don't have any surprises once it starts. The phasing overview is another item, of course, that we've looked at in depth at this point. We've come to a finalization on that where basically, of course, the pre-construction is going to consist of 6 24-by-60-foot portable buildings with 12 classrooms at the southwest corner of the site. Tenant delivery date for that will be September 2019, and that will be pending on DSA approval and bid process. The phase one itself will consist of the construction of a new west classroom. That's the two-story classroom building that was shown in ZP's slide. I didn't list on this slide here, but that will also include the demo of some existing portables there. When we move into phase two, we'll be demoing some of the existing classroom buildings, and we'll construct the east classroom building, which is similar to the west classroom building. That's the second of the two-story classroom buildings. Phase three would be pretty much the remainder of the site. We will be demoing the existing administration kindergarten buildings, and then we will construct the new administration NPR kitchen and kindergarten buildings. And like I've said here before in these meetings, the parking lot, regardless of how you plan it, has to go in during the summer. So depending on when the job is bid and after we do the milestone schedule for the timing of the project, the last summer of the project is when the parking lot will go in. This slide basically represents the aerial view of the portable buildings that I mentioned earlier. It's a little askew there, but it has the front street there running up and down, or east and west in this case, but that's the look at the 6 buildings that'll house the 12 interim classrooms. The lollipop or balloon in the slide, I guess I could use the pointer here, is this area right here is what's mandated by the fire department for accessibility and turnaround. Actually, I would like to go back to that a little bit, and because of the requirements here with the portable classrooms and the fire department turnaround zone, anybody who's familiar with the site will be able to identify the fact that there's not a lot of playground room by the time we get done with all these temporary installments and the requirements for the fire department. Now, the area for the fire department doesn't mean that we can't have a striped play area, but I mean, obviously, we couldn't put up anything vertical that would impede a fire truck from having access or turning around. So we'll try to make best use of that, and we'll try to coordinate that with Jason and Marcos and Alex and Dr. Mitchell and try to find out what the best case scenario is to use that property. This is kind of a rudimentary plan, color-coded for the phasing that I described earlier with the phase one, of course, up here. Well, actually, excuse me, it starts off with the interim housing, and we just looked at that slide. And then once that's in place and the project goes out to bid and the actual hardcore construction starts. We'll start with phase one, which is shown up there in the upper left-hand corner with the red. And then we'll move over to phase two for the other classroom building, which is identical pretty much to the other one, other than the fact that it's, I think it's spun 180 degrees, I think. But right, so there's minor differences, but in size and everything is pretty typical. The final phase, which is three, I went ahead and list two phase threes in this to illustrate the fact that I just explained earlier, and that we'll be doing the MPR, the lunch area, the admin building, the kindergarten building in phase three. In addition to that, we will be doing the parking lot towards the end of the project, and I don't think that's any news bulletin for folks that have sat in on these meetings before at this point. And that wraps up my portion of the Oswalt involvement of Ledesma and Meyer.
Okay. Russ will answer any questions you may have.
North? Where is it? It's north at the
top? Is what north? I'm sorry.
On that slide?
Oh, yes.
Is it top north?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see the existing classroom. Your science building is right up here. And so your parking lot is in the same area.
Okay.
So the campus is pretty much orientated the same way it is now. This is your existing play field. I'm sorry, I'm not super familiar with the streets right now. Is this Shadow Creek right here? Is that what it's called?
Shadow Oak, okay.
And this is Janice, I think, on the back.
So.
David?
On the two-story building, what grade levels will be using the upper floors?
I think that, if I'm not mistaken, that the upper grades are using, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jorge, this phase one on the upper floor here. And I think there's a set of lockers in the bottom.
So on the in the east classroom building, we have the lower grades on the first floor and the upper grades on the second floor. The west classroom houses locker rooms and some other spaces, as well as some offices up on the second floor, and also has the upper sixth graders.
So you have progression. You have kindergarten here, and then it works its way up to the upper grades, and then the furthest grades, upper tallest grades up here.
So where's the kindergarten?
The kindergarten building is right here.
It's a one-story building by itself.
Okay, and where's the play area?
It's right in the center,
okay,
right here.
So it is, okay. And the other thing, you mentioned IT department. Mm-hmm. Have they reviewed the classroom layouts as far as need
very much so for
IT and
yes.
Things mm-hmm. like that? Okay.
Right. Both Kurt, we've even had Jose Franco there, and, of course, Phil George has been there. So they've sat in on our biweekly meetings, and then, of course, Marcos has helped us out with the existing standards that the district has.
Thank you.
The interim housing there that it shows there, that's
yes.
on the play fields, right?
Yes. This is currently occupied by the play field right now.
And we'll be housing all students there and in the existing building that will remain, is that correct?
Well, you will be taking, you have a set of portables up here right now which will have to be demoed in order to start this first building, and when that demo takes place, then they will move down into these portables. Now you have existing portables that also run along this west side of the campus. Those will remain until no longer needed, which in my estimation would probably be towards the end of the project. Of course, if we can sort it out and get the kids into some of the newer buildings, and we can take those out prior to the end of the project and maybe give back some play space. I'm not making any promises, but, I mean, that's something I'd like to do.
I was concerned when you said that September was the delivery date for the portables, but if you have portables on campus that you can move, because, you know, kids are back in school already and we're getting portables, but we've already got some that we'll be using and moved to where we need them.
And we would also look for natural breaks during the year to actually have students move.
I think it's important to have a successful project to put as much in place as early as possible so that you don't have any delays and you move right into your succession of phases. I know that works better for the district and also better for the contractor. We don't like to give the contractors any excuses of not being starting.
How do you control the construction noise and the construction traffic?
Well, there's only so much you can control. Luckily, there's a few comments here. We have to work within the regulations of the city and what time the work can take place. So this area here, I'm sure, is 7 o'clock in the morning, so we'll work within those parameters. We won't work late, and we'll try to keep the weekend work to a minimum. By that, I mean no Sunday and limited Saturday. Now, the good news is that these buildings that we are demoing are not necessarily steel structure built, brick-type buildings. They're pretty much all portable buildings anyways. I could probably take them out with my Subaru, but that's beside the point. So there shouldn't be a lot of noise as far as that goes. We have a good steel contractor during the construction phase, and there shouldn't be too much banging going on, I hope. But as far as the demo phase, I don't see any excessive noise being a problem.
How about the construction traffic? Where are the construction trucks going to be?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have all the laydown areas ironed out yet, and we're still looking at that, and it is going to be a rather complex solution because of the limited space for the project. But for the first part of the phase, we're seriously considering, and probably will use this back entrance here coming off of Janus to build this first building here, and then we will use some of the grass green belt that's up front once we move into the successional phases. So we're still looking into that, and it's been very challenging right now because of the size of the site.
Yeah, I think also because of the school-aged children, that we have heavy equipment coming and going, and
right.
construction of little kids that are running around.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we will limit the access of heavy equipment. I mean, obviously, we're not going to run heavy equipment into and through the site during drop-off and pickup times. Yeah, no.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for a great report.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Don't go too far, Russ. Yes, thank you. Our final update will be on the Roland High School Additions Project. Again, as an overview for the project, it is a two-story building containing 22 classrooms, an administration building, NPR, ASB, Library and Performing Arts Center. The architect was WLC. The contractor was ACC, and their contract was $43.7 million. And our construction manager is Ledesma Meyer. And this project also was done in three phases. First, the picture of our 22 classrooms. In phase one. And in phase two can be broken up into like two different categories. The part A, which was the administration library building and ASB classrooms. And part B is the Performing Arts Center, Food Center, NPR, and additional classrooms. And Russ will go ahead and share phase two work and phase three.
Okay, thank you. Starting with the administration exterior, recently we've been working on the irrigation line and the sprinklers out in front of the building along Otterbein. Trees and plants are being installed, and the street side elevator and tower marquees have been in place. I just wanted to introduce a couple slides here, show you a couple slides in case you haven't been to the site recently. This is just some of the landscaping on the entrance there on the south. This has been dressed up a little bit, just even in the last week, where we've got it graded and ready for turf. I hope to have turf in probably within a week or so in the area. That's just a view along Otterbein right there, just showing where some of the planting has gone in. And then for update on the kitchen and NPR, I think most of you have seen these stats before, so I'll just breeze over them briefly. 13,000 square feet, and of course there's a prep area, speed lines, pass-through windows for the kids. There's obviously a staff office. There is an interior staff lounge dining area as well as an exterior dining area, which I think is pretty cool. The student multi-purpose dining area and lobby, of course, two multi-purpose storage rooms, which are quite large. You could keep your tables in there for the NPR area. And then there are staff and student restaurants in that particular area. Did I say restaurants? I meant restrooms, excuse me. Performing Arts Theater. That's 18,000 square feet. I broke the building up. The whole building itself is 44,000 square feet. So I kind of broke it up so we get a better understanding of the building. The Performing Arts Theater section is 18,000 square feet itself. The theater housing seats 615 people. Of course, you've got a main curtain and stage and rigging for all that. The rigging, I think, accommodates as many as somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 different curtains. the main lobby and restrooms, ticket booth and lobby concession counter. There's a scene shop in the back where they can work on their props, and there's costume storage rooms. There's performer dressing rooms that have individual restrooms inside there. There is a lighting and audio control rooms to afford for a complete performing arts theater. And then, of course, there's upper level catwalk systems. The theater and kitchen NPR current construction activities. Right now, we are moving away from the rough end stage of the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing phase and into the finish stages right now. We hopefully will have a painter on site as early as Monday to give you an idea where we're at on the interior. The interior hollow metal frames and doors are being installed. Actually, most of them are already in, if they're not all in. The interior drywall is being hung and taped. Interior tiles being laid in the restrooms. The exterior plaster final coat is being applied. They're pretty much wrapped that up today. They'll be taking, if you go by there tomorrow, you'll see that most of the scaffolding is coming down now. The stage rigging equipment has been delivered on site. I list that because that can be a long lead item at times and can be very troublesome if it's not on site on time. It comes usually from out of state. The theater catwalks are nearing completion. We just have some handrails to be installed on them. The kitchen, freezer, and cooler boxes are set and being trimmed out. Our next steps include interior and exterior painting, windows, doors, and ceiling systems and lights. And then I have some slides that I can roll through here for you real quick and show you kind of where we're at. This would be from what will be the student parking lot. It's a look at the backside, or actually it's the front of the campus, but it is technically the backside of the stage. Since this picture was taken, the color plaster coat has been installed, and most of that, a lot of that scaffolding is coming down right now, actually, as we speak. This is also the same elevation of the NPR room. This little area right here is where the exterior staff dining area will be. There'll be a CMU wall built here that's kind of on a radius. I think it's like a 6-foot-tall block wall to go there where the staff can be pick up their food inside and, of course, eat inside or enjoy the outside if the weather's nice. This is the other side of the NPR building. It's kind of hard to tell what's going on with all the scaffolding up and the plastic draped everywhere, but this would be the entrance to the NPR area, and this would be the entrance to the kitchen area. As you turn the corner here from the kitchen, this would be the ticket booth or window for the theater, and then this would be the west side entrance to the theater lobby. I included this slide because I wanted to point out the fact that we used to have that portable P27 that was there. It's been removed since then. That was our low voltage hub that I talked about earlier for this project and the upcoming project at Oswald. So this area is being graded, and we're going to make some improvements there on the courtyard. This is the current status of the NPR interior. This is just a typical shot of a restroom tile finish. I think you've seen pictures of these before. This would be the prep area for the kitchen so that students would pick up their food. A point of sale would be here, and then in the other room, next one over, it would be an interior speed line, which would be a second scenario for kids to also pick up their food in there. This would be looking back the other way to the kitchen. This would be another prep area, and this would be the staff dining room area. It's cooler freezer boxes. This is the actual picture of inside of the staff dining room. This is the theater area. This would be from the wheelchair lift right here, and this would be the stage up at this end. We're looking back into the seating area. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell in these pictures, but of course the slab here is sloped to accommodate better viewing. This would be the lighting and control rooms in the back, also top and bottom, where you would work your controls for certain productions. This is also another lighting window here. This is a catwalk here that is used for lighting. This is looking from the opposite direction, looking to the south. This is looking from one of the catwalks in the back, looking down at the stage area itself. This is up on the stage. This area here is basically the depth and the height that you need to accommodate all the curtains that I spoke about earlier. The curtains are supported by the stage rigging that I talked about. We hope to be painting that area as early as next week. This is the theater lobby facing towards the west. On the side here, These will be display cabinets, and then the restrooms are here on the right. This would be the entrance to the lobby. This is looking back the opposite way to the east. This would be a you could use it as a concession stand counter, or if you wanted to put certain pamphlets there or information for the productions that are in session. This would be one entrance. This is another entrance into the theater. The band and choir room, again, I listed that separate to kind of break it up and give you a good feel. That's 7,800 square feet. There's a choir room. There are three practice rooms in the choir area. There is a band room in a separate area that has some practice rooms and an office. There's a large instrument storage room in between the two classrooms. And, of course, you'll have your storage rack systems, and there are two storage rooms for the robes as well. This is a look at the band room, just the progress that where we're at this point. This is the choir room. These would be the practice rooms back here in the back. The special education building is just a little over 4,000 square feet. It has three classrooms, two offices, and two restrooms. Now, this is located where we had the temporary staff, which was in P1 through P6 out there off of the parking lot. This is a look of the floor plan. You basically got one, two, and three classrooms with the restrooms and the joint offices in between. This was taken earlier last week where we cleared out the portable buildings. Since this slide was taken, we have dug footings, and we ran our underground waste lines. The good news about our situation with this building is that we have all the material we need to build this building. By that, I mean we have the structural steels on site. The steel studs are there. We already have staged the exterior gypboard, interior drywall board. We're all ready to go. I expect this building to go up in a pretty short time. Our phase three upcoming work includes the construction of the new special ed building we just looked at, the main parking lot. We will be removing the portable hideout building that's on the back area of the campus. In that area, we'll be installing new asphalt and concrete at the exterior basketball areas. We'll be removing the temporary kitchen portable that's been in use, and we'll remove the asphalt, and we'll plant grass at the contractor yard that's behind the pool area right now. It's out in the ball field. And then we'll make any necessary site repairs before we demobilize from the site at the end of this summer. In summary, phase three began in June of 2016. A three-phase project, scheduled to be completed by September 2019. Phase one was completed on schedule in 2017. Phase two began in 2017 and will be completed in August of 2019. Like Alex mentioned earlier, that's kind of a split phase. I think everybody here knows that the administration and library building is obviously being occupied, and that the kitchen and theater building is still under construction. Started at the same time, but because of the complexity and size of the theater and kitchen building, it takes a little longer to build that building. We didn't see any reason not to hand over the administration building as soon as possible. The site clearing is underway for the new education, special education building, which I just spoke about. The phase three parking lot replacement is going to start in the summer. And currently, we are on time and on budget. I think that leads us to questions.
At this time, we'll take any questions you may have, answer them.
Angelina?
Do you have any? No? Do you have any?
Lynn?
Construction is probably more to Alex. Alex, in the front of the science building, that hill that's got grass, that some's dead and some is alive, and you know what I mean, right along Otterbein?
Yes.
Will you be planting grass there? Are we going to plant ground cover? Maybe something to keep the kids off of.
Yeah, we actually are going to be hiring the same consultant to give us a quote and to do the whole front of it. We want to kind of blend in the campus, and there's some money set aside to blend in the campus, not just landscaping, but also with painting facades in different areas so that it doesn't look like the new and the old.
Since the kids use that quite a bit, walking downhill and mm-hmm. wear out the grass, maybe putting some walkways to go down, okay. or some walkways or stepping stones or something might be good.
We'll review that area.
Carrie.
The band room and the choir room, I see the step there. Are they the stages inside of the band room?
No. The band room and the choir room are both level surfaces. Mm-hmm. The band room is slightly bigger to accommodate, you know, the extra room you need to exercise the equipment. But
yeah. There's no stage area.
No, there's no stage area in the practice in the band rooms.
David.
On slide 106, where you have the theater seating area.
Okay.
I don't know why, but it looks like the floor is flat there.
And that's kind of why I mentioned it when I showed the slide. No, it's at a slope. So if you start at the back of the stage and move forward over it, it raises about 3 feet. It's a typical slope you'll find in any theater setting, I'm sure. In the center of it, there is, of course, a flat ribbon that runs across it, which will allow for foot traffic.
Okay, and then the building for special education, I'm not too sure. Do we have rooms set aside for special ed now at Roland High?
Yeah, special ed right now is in the back portables, behind the M building, basically. There's the proximity to a restroom is in that area, which was why the area was selected by Mitch.
Okay, and then my little soapbox. you know, you guys do a fantastic job on completing these buildings, but I don't think the process should stop at that point. I think we need to implement a process on how we take the building back. And what I mean by that is how we need to actually train the staff on how to use the new building. We went on a tour last night and looked at Roland High that's been open for a little while now. And I think the staff could use some assistance on decorating and where they can hang things, where they shouldn't hang things, and how they should set up the rooms. And I think we kind of just give them the building, and then it's up to you to do what you want with it. And I think we need to give them some guidelines and some help in doing that to preserve how nice the building is when we receive it.
Keep it that way.
Thank you.
Harry?
We have the rainbow kindergarten there. Are we going to keep it or no more? The nor up here? Yes, of course.
Just a quick comment as well. Having lived through the Nogales project, as Ms. Ebbingkamp mentioned, with all the change orders and everything, I couldn't have imagined that this project would go so smoothly. And I think it's just a testament to having the right people in the right positions to that truly understood their job and what they were supposed to do in charge of this. It's made a huge difference. I mean, I don't even want to relive some of the things that were brought before the board regarding the Nogales project and how many issues we had. So I'm very much appreciative to have seen this presentation tonight, and that everything is, knock on wood, going smoothly. But, you know, but that's the thing.
Don't jinx
me. Even if we had a couple of bumps right now, I still think that it would be far better than what we experienced in the past.
Absolutely. You know? We're far enough. Thank you, first of all, for that remark. But we're far enough along in the process now where I think we can overcome just about any hurdle with most of the structural components being in. And it truly is a team effort. I appreciate your comment, but it's helped through yourself, the district, with Alex, Dr. Mitchell, Marcos, and our architects, very good. Ledesma Meyer, we like to think you could check our record any time. That's one of our one of the things we like to stand on, is the fact that we get most of our projects, if not all of our projects, done on schedule. I mean, you always have your challenges.
Right, exactly.
We feel very proud in our performance in that respect.
The other thing I want to comment on is using the institutional knowledge that we already have here. That's been used this time, whereas people brought up comments before when we were working on other projects and were kind of ignored, even though they had been here and knew what had happened in a building or what was going on in a building. They were ignored when they could have, if they had been listened to in the institutional history that they knew about certain facilities, could have saved a lot of time and grief and money.
Right. I know that when I first came to your district, there was a lot of opportunities to sit in on sessions that were called lessons learned at that time. And we got the message loud and clear, so I'm not sure what, you know, in the past what the situation was, but those were very beneficial for us.
And it's why we really appreciate the team effort, actually the direction from the board also, Dr. Mitchell, of these lessons learned and listen to incorporate those designs. So all these input, all the information you provide tonight, we've taken notes also to make sure that it's included in designs and it becomes a part of that lessons learned. One last thing I want to share about this project is we will be closing Roland High School this summer again, and we'll be moving our students for our extended learning to Alvarado. So that's we'll be housing Alvarado students and also Roland High School students. And we'll be making sure that we make those communication to Alvarado's parents soon under lessons learned.
Oh, I wanted to just say that thank you for being on time. I repeat what Angelina said and to keep on budget. And we had our grand opening and it was just so wonderful. The library looks like it's a college. You guys do excellent work and thank you for a great report.
You're welcome. Yeah, I really like the design that WLC did. It seems being there every day and watching how the kids move through the building and the staff is pretty, the way they laid it out was very nice.
And you could tell you're working hard because every time I go, I'm taking pictures and tweeting out, look at Roland High School. So great job. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Russ. This concludes our presentation.
Thank you so much, Alex and team and everybody. May I have a motion and a second to adjourn the board study session of the Roland Unified School District Board of Education?
I make a motion.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting is adjourned at 6:26 p.m.